Hello, good morning. This is Emily Austin for the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and you're listening to Faithfully Memphis. Each week we have the opportunity to join with our friends at WYXR 91.7 FM here in Memphis to talk about how faith intersects with our life and the things that we that are floating to the top every day. And today, I'm really excited to have back on my good friend, the Reverend Tom Momberg, who is the priest in charge at All Saints Episcopal Church here in Memphis. You can find them at the corner of Quince and White Station here in Memphis. It's a wonderful church right there in the heart of the Sea Isle neighborhood. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning, Emily. I'm well, especially after that introduction.
Oh, well, you know, I can go. I can go for a while, can't I? And I've also got Courtney Staub. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm so bad.
It's okay. My own brother called me Staub at my rehearsal dinner, so it's all good.
Well, Courtney, you're here, and you are, we've been in each other's lives for about a year and a half now.
Wow.
You're involved very heavily with Moms Demand Action.
I am.
Here in Memphis, and I'm really excited to have you back on the show today.
Thank you.
As we're talking about the intersection between faith and advocacy and standing up for the things that matter, right?
Right.
Here in Memphis. But Tom, first, let's talk a little bit about where we are in our little calendar, in our liturgical calendar for the Episcopal Church. There's kind of a big day coming up on Sunday. What is that big day that's coming up?
Well, yeah, it's excuse me, it's called Pentecost.
Yeah.
In ancient times was known as Whit Sunday.
Yeah, Whit Sunday.
But Pentecost is the festival, if you will, the celebration of the coming of the Holy Spirit to the people of God. Once Jesus, as the story goes, has been resurrected and ascended to heaven. But the part about that story that I want to mention today, comes from one of the Bible verses, the scriptures that's appointed for Pentecost, and it's from the letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians, the first letter, where he says there are a varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit, who allots to each one individually just as the Spirit chooses. So the way I think about that is, I am not tech savvy like Emily Austin,
I
never will be.
Oh, I don't know, Tom.
And that's okay.
You're
because she is.
You're better than you think you are.
But I can learn from her and be a little more savvy. I also know that I have something in terms of my gift to bring to the world and to the church, and that is that I was ordained 36 years ago, and I've served churches in about a dozen different places. Mm. And so I have a variety of not just gifts, but experience really in being part of faith communities, basically in this eastern half of the country. Mm. And so serving a church like All Saints now in official retirement part-time, part of my gift is knowing that I'm only supposed to be working part-time.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, how do I find other people and other gifts to help raise up to do the work of the church and in the community? And thanks for mentioning the Sea Isle Park community or neighborhood, Emily, because All Saints has been active in that community for a long time. And I think part of the discerning of gifts, spiritual gifts, is knowing what's going on in the community outside the church that can be helpful to the church and vice versa.
Yeah.
So always more to say about Pentecost, but
it's ordinary time. It's just so, I love that we call it ordinary time. It's like summertime. It's the biggest big chunk of church liturgical time that we find during the year. It's kind of when we're given an opportunity to kind of nestle into you're not celebrating Advent, you're not celebrating Christmas or Easter. It's mm-hmm. just like, okay, let's go do some work. Let's get to work.
Yeah,
and be the church.
I would add to that those other seasons are about 6 months of the year, and then the season after Pentecost, which is also, in addition to being called ordinary time, often called the green season.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Here we are. Look at how green things are and how we can grow and learn. And so the next 6 months are full of opportunities for us all to do that, seems to me.
Yeah, well, happy Pentecost, happy birthday of the church to us all. We all met up at All Saints.
Yes.
Everybody in this room, we met up at All Saints about a year ago. And I don't think that there's a lot of mistakes in timing. I don't think that it's a mistake that that when we're talking today, we're talking on the almost anniversary of the massacre in Uvalde, Texas, which spurred just a it's America. This is not a place where these events and mass shootings are isolated by any stretch of the imagination. But I think that last summer was a particularly brutal and awful time. And, you know, we're a year out. And one of the reasons why we gathered at All Saints about a year ago was because we knew that we needed to do something beyond thoughts and prayers. Mm-hmm. We knew that, we've known that for a while, but it was like, okay, well, what can we do right now? Well, we can partner with an organization that we have deep roots with and who we know to be doing good work, Moms Demand Action here in the Mid-South. And so we reached out to that organization and said, hey, y'all are the subject matter experts. Help us. Help us as Episcopalians and people of faith cope with this violence that we're seeing every day. Help us to arm our own people with the skills and the things that we need to do to make our community safer. And so about a year ago, we met up and with about 30 other people of faith throughout Memphis. We came together and learned about advocacy and firearm safety, and we prayed for our own communities, and we prayed for the peoples whose communities have already been affected. And here we are a year later, and a lot has happened. And so I don't know. I just want to honor that where we are in that moment, and I want to honor the fact that Moms Demand has really extended themselves to our faith community, our Episcopal faith community, in a way that we need our communities. We have to coalesce, and y'all have definitely been there for us. And so I just want to honor that and appreciate that. But Tom, you recently, last week, you were in Washington for a really important meeting. Will you tell us a little bit about what you were in Washington for last week?
Sure. excuse me. I'm a little raspy today, so if I need to clear my throat, I'll try to do that as quietly as I can.
As I gulp my giant thing of coffee. Yes, you
gotcha. I do want to start, though, by being very specific about what happened a year ago in Uvalde, Texas, at Robb Elementary School. 19 children, 2 teachers died, 17 more injured. And since then, the U.S. has experienced 650 mass shootings and well over 40,000 deaths from gun violence. And now we all know the statistic, I think, many of us anyway, that guns are the top killers of children in the United States. So part of my motivation for being a volunteer with Moms and for going to this conference last week is that I have children. I'm not a mother. I'm not a mom.
But you are a Momberg.
I am a Momberg, and that's a whole other conversation. but I am a father of two children, and you know, there's an old expression there, but for the grace of God go I. Sometimes I think really the expression ought to be there go I, or there I might go. And so as a parent, as a pastor, this is really important work for me. And so last week was a gathering of Episcopalians and others from around the country, mostly from the metro DC area. The group that called us together is a group that's about 10 years old. It's Episcopal bishops, and they call themselves Bishops United Against Gun Violence. But this time, instead of just bishops meeting, they invited others who are not bishops to come. And I was one of two people from Memphis and from the Diocese of West Tennessee to be asked to go. And you know that expression, drinking from a fire hose? I have done a lot of reading and been involved with Moms work almost from the beginning of Moms. But I learned so much more from these bishops and other faith leaders, including folks who are not Episcopalian, about what they have been doing religiously, faithfully, day after day after day. The church we met at is a church on Capitol Hill. And you literally go out the door, go to the corner, and there is the Capitol right in front of you.
Wow.
And so the advocacy is much easier when you're that geographically close to what's going on. I can say more about what I learned there, but what I think I want to say very specifically is we were supposed to have a closing worship service with communion, and it got canceled, postponed, because Senator Raphael Warnock was having a press conference on gun violence, preventing gun violence, at that same time. And so we simply picked up and moved over to the conference, to the press conference. And it was him, another senator, two representatives from the House, and many others, including a teenager, a college student, a doctor, all basically telling their survivor stories.
Wow.
Their stories of what it was like to be a survivor in some way or shape or another of gun violence. And there's something about storytelling that helps us learn in ways we might not learn otherwise.
Yeah, that's a good seg. Courtney, tell me about your story with Moms and how it's tied up in your life and why this work is important to you and something that you've carved out a lot of time and energy and thought and advocacy work too.
Being in Moms in Tennessee is its own kind of struggle, but I think there's sort of a sweet irony in that, if you will, because you're motivated. The change is incremental. It's not quick. It's often small, but being able to just gather with people who in your community also say this is a horrifying and unnecessary problem that we cannot seem to overcome. So when All Saints reached out and said, hi, can we do an event with our community, with the Moms community? Yes. It's just, and I think, Emily, I think you and Father Tom know, I spoke about it when we had our event about a year ago. It really, when this all came to a forefront for me, Tom was talking about his children. Emily, I know you've got a sweet kiddo. I have now a 16-year-old daughter. But when Newtown happened, it was so shocking. It was so shocking. And it made me say to myself, okay, so it is time for you to do something decisive.
Yeah.
Because if we don't figure out how to start doing something decisive and intentional about this, we're not going to start creating that change. So it's, and we were speaking before the podcast started, there's too that you start seeing that intersectionality about, here's gun violence and who does it impact?
Yeah.
So if you care for other communities, if you care for your friends of color, if you care for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, you start seeing that you're working on gun violence. I'm using my little air quote fingers, but you're connecting with other communities who are being impacted by it, and you're seeing their need too. And I really have been grateful for that, because it's opening my eyes to more of what's happening in Memphis and what else is impacting our communities besides gun violence, and or what are the effects of that gun violence for these communities. So
did you grow up in Memphis,
Courtney? No, I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay.
And really, and I'm a child of the 80s. I just don't, sometimes it's unfathomable to me, because there were things we were scared of, sure, but that gun violence was never one of those things. Our children, Emily, I'd say that more to you, just because I think Tom's might be just a little bit older, is our children have never known a world without it. And whenever I think about that, it hurts my heart in a deep way.
You know, I was listening to a podcast recently, and the guest was a recent high school graduate, and the host was talking about how he can't even imagine how, like, going to school and having lockdown drills. And I after listening to that, I mentioned that to my daughter. I was like, you know, who is 11 and about to go into sixth grade, and I said to her, you know, I just want you to know that the world that you're living in is very, very different from the one that I grew up in. We had tornado drills. We had earthquake drills where we had to get underneath the desks, and the tornado drills where we had to, like, you know, huddle along the walls. And those were terrifying when it was just a drill. I can't even imagine and fathom what it's like to be a student now.
And what do you say to it? The little biddies, the 3, 4, and 5 year olds, how do you explain to them in a way that doesn't terrify them that all of a sudden they've got to go get in this closet, lock the door, turn out the light, and be really quiet? I don't know how you explain that there's no way, in my estimation, to explain that to children of any age, whether you have age-appropriate language, and not have it scare them.
And have it being very, very jarring. Yeah.
Right.
Not to mention the vicarious trauma.
Oh, absolutely.
That happens as
a
result.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So I grew up with bomb shelter and bomb drills.
See, and I can't even wrap my mind around that either.
So children will, it seems to me, no matter what age, will face trauma. The question is, in adults, how much of that is just the natural reality of growing up as a human being in the world, and how much of that is imposed by us as human beings?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. I want to say something about Sandy Hook, and I'm really glad that Courtney, you just mentioned it. So my involvement with moms happened just after Sandy Hook, when moms didn't even exist yet. And that's because that was, of course, 10 years ago last December.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the spring of 2013?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Wasn't doing the math well there. In the spring of 2013, the Episcopal Bishop of Maryland, where I was serving a church, Eugene Sutton, said, I'm going to the state capitol in Annapolis. Who's coming with me?
Wow.
And by the way, he's one of the movers and shakers for the Bishops United Against Gun Violence. Mm-hmm. So that's not surprising.
Which Bishop Phoebe Rowe, here in our diocese, she is part of that coalition of Bishops United.
Yes, there are about 100 of our bishops, mm-hmm. the majority almost, I think. But anyway, so I went, and there were mothers there with, and those of you who know me well know I've told the story all the time, but it's really important to me. There were mothers there with magic markers and poster board, and they were handing it out and saying, make your own sign.
Yeah.
And they were the moms mm-hmm. before MOMS, all caps, demand action. The rest of that name or title, Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, right? So Moms has been important to me as an organization for a long time, and I think more and more now.
Yeah.
To know that as someone who wants to be an advocate, personally, to know that there are other advocates. You said something about my people, right?
Yeah.
There are other people who are my people in terms of wanting to do something. Thoughts and prayers, that's okay.
Yeah.
Policy and action, that's also necessary.
Yeah. For me, at least, this is Emily speaking, like the policy and action for me are the thoughts and the prayers. Mm. My prayer is, it takes the form a lot of times as advocacy.
Yes.
I mean, and that's not to diminish the importance of, you know, a quiet time that you spend with the divine listening. That's an important prayer as well. But when I, you know, it's the elephant in the room that I think we tend to, maybe in the circles that we run in, we ignore it a little bit, is that, okay, well, this work has been labeled by the mainstream as political. It is, they would call it political. And it's like, oh, well, you know, we're Americans. We need to keep religious life separate from what is the political. And for me, at least, I don't see it as political at all. This is me being a mother. This is me being a citizen of the human race and wanting to stand up and say, no, what I'm seeing and what I'm experiencing is not right. My neighbors are dying as a result of these actions. I can't not pray with my actions.
Right. And what does your faith call you to do? I feel really, I will stand on that soapbox because I'm really working on embracing that. And forgive me, for those of you who don't know, I'm Unitarian, and we are not always quick with our biblical verses and our references.
You're in good company.
I feel like there's a verse or a, you know, something that I've heard in other churches about you're the hands and feet. You're the hands and feet of Jesus, and I think that to me is pretty crystal clear.
Yeah.
Go forth. Go and demonstrate your faith, as Emily said so beautifully. Quiet time with your divine, with your higher power, I think is good for all of us to reflect on our own lives, on the lives of those we care for, the wider world. But that going out and demonstrating that you care for others in your community in a visible way, I think is just critically important.
Absolutely. Talk to me, if you will, Courtney, a little bit about, can you unpack that a little bit more about how your understanding of the divine and your connection to your faith is tied up in this kind of work? Because I mean, you have a life outside of Moms. You have a career, you have a family, you are a woman, you are a human. I mean, we're all just, sometimes I feel like I'm a wireframe of a person and all these things just hang on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you are the same way. Like how has that faith component been tied up in this work that you've been doing?
Oh, wow. I feel like there's that, there, to me, it's a divine connectivity. Here's the world in front of me with this really oppressive problem of pervasive gun violence, and it is touching every single one of us, some of us directly, some of us indirectly, but I think just the three of us could sit right now and talk about who we know directly, maybe someone in our family and our tight circle of friends who's been affected by gun violence, someone we've lost. So I think that it is becoming so pervasive. I apologize, Emily. I love to go on a tangent.
No. I am a rabbit trail chaser as well. Yes. So go there. We got time.
My brother's spirit is with us right now. He loved a tangent better than he loved to breathe. But I say that to say, then if this problem is getting larger and pervasive, then how do I show my faith in action? And I also feel like that's how you reflect the strength of your faith and kind of the commitment to your faith. I want to go out into the wider world and say, yes, I'm a member of Church of the River. Yes, I'm involved with Moms Demand Action. These two things are intertwined to me.
Yeah.
My minister says, as people of faith, we go forth. As people of faith, we show courage. So to me, it's the two intersect perfectly. And you were talking, Emily, about, you know, all the many roles that we all fill in our lives. We're mothers, we're pastors, we're volunteers, we're wives and husbands. But for me, early on in Moms, my kiddo came to me one day and said, "Thank you, Mommy. Thank you for doing Moms." He said, "I know you're trying to help make things safer."
Mm.
Well, there you go.
And that,
there you go.
You're like, okay, I feel blessed.
Right.
That's those are my marching orders right there.
Exactly. Yeah. And as long as, I mean, you know, doing work of this kind, and I won't just say that is exclusively to moms. There are other causes out there that take a lot of that resilience and energy and endurance. But as long as there are people in this world who are unsafe, as long as there are people in this world who are experiencing gun violence, then I'm like, the work's not done yet.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to keep going.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you used that phrase, divine connectivity, because one thing I wanted to say today for sure about the spirit and spirituality is that the thing that Brené Brown says, that we are hardwired for connection.
Yeah.
We are hardwired for spiritual connection, regardless of our religious preferences and practices.
We love you, Brené.
Yes.
And one of the things that I believe connectivity and spirituality are all about is divine. That it's going on because we are powerless to make it happen ourselves.
Yeah,
that there is some power greater than ourselves. And as a recovering person, I'm borrowing some 12-step language here, but I really firmly believe that the whole thing about people not finding church as a place that's safe or healthy for them as a home, and the decline of churches in terms of attendance and participation. I've said for a long time that I think we cannot have too many spiritual homes.
Yeah,
right.
And I think for some people, Moms Demand Action is a spiritual home.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, it goes back to that. You're the priest. You'll know the quote. But you know, where two or three or more are gathered, is prayer important? Heck yeah, it's important. And is worship important?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But God wants us to be together and to coalesce around something that exalts the unity of his creation. And if we, and whatever space that takes, you know, I feel like a lot of times I get pulled in a lot of directions about connectivity, and we learned some new things about connectivity and community during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I've vacillated a lot over the years around social media and internet connectivity, and by that I mean like just people that you meet in a digital context. You know, it can be great or it can be really toxic, but I feel like when we can come together with people who see the same thing that we see, and we can work together to create a world that's safer and more just and that has more equity, I mean, that's church.
Yes.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we all God's children? I mean, I say yes. And honestly, I'm not knowing how to have a conversation with another person who says, I'm a person of faith and these are God's chosen children and these are not. I think, well, if you got a secret memo from the heavens that tells you that, yeah, I'm so excited for you, but I haven't received a memo to tell me anything else. So as long as I'm hanging out here doing my groovy Unitarian thing, I'm going to keep, like, we are all children of God. And if we are all children of God, then it's like we all need to be empowering one another to walk on that path,
yes,
to walk toward our best selves, hopefully, yeah, and acknowledging that for some of us that journey is much easier than others.
Yeah.
I was looking for a quote a moment ago. I'm glad I found it. The great Howard Thurman, who inspired so many during the Civil Rights era and still inspires many of us today, once said, the most important questions on which mental health depends, by the way, this is still Mental Health Awareness Month,
it is.
Are, here are the questions. Who am I and what am I? Mm. And so, so I am an ecumenist. That means that I want to be in conversation and work with people of other Christian denominations. I don't limit it there. I really, it's more interfaith work that I want to be about, especially now at this stage of my life. And I want to hang out with groovy Unitarians and
I feel like
crazy
Unitarians,
Presbyterians.
I think Unitarians do it the best. They are like the ultimate interfaith ecumenical. I mean, that's just, I mean, that's me speaking out of, like, I don't know as much about the Unitarian, like, way of faith as I want to. But it seems to me like y'all are onto something.
It's Emily, I could sit here and talk about it for a long time. It's only because I've never been anything else. I mean, we started going to Unitarian Church in Knoxville when I was 6. So yeah. I've never known. I was christened in a Lutheran church, but I mean, you know, yeah, I was 6 months old. I don't remember that.
There's
this, you can paint this sort of glossy overlay on the Unitarian church and say, ooh, they've got it figured out because everybody's welcome. But I will say on the other side of that, it's a more rigorous faith journey because you're not going to get more kind of specific direction, specific scripture, specific sort of like, here is your pathway to finding your spiritual best self or to enlightenment or to, you know, whatever that, you know, called, you know, receive God's grace and favor. I'm using these phrases, but yeah, it's spoken to me because it's very inclusive and because I feel like it is a place where I feel very comfortable doing, you know, justice and advocacy work as part of my spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. So, and I think I'm seeing other faith communities that are embracing that more. I applaud you and Father Tom for looking at your faith community at All Saints and Beyond and saying, how can we make this part of what we're doing as a church community.
Yeah. I would add that, you know, who am I and what am I? I have to say I'm a lifelong Episcopalian, but my mother was Baptist and my father was Catholic, and that was the compromise they found. And I'm still very happy and proud to say I am an Episcopalian, because I think the work that has been done in the Episcopal Church, especially in the last 30 to 40 years, actually even before that, in the Civil Rights era, beginning in the Civil Rights era, has been more and more a journey toward we are all children of God.
Yeah.
We are all meant to be at the table, whatever that means and whatever that looks like. And it's going to be different in different congregations. Church of the River is not every Unitarian church.
No.
Just as All Saints, which is a small church, is not every Episcopal church. So there is not just a variety, but a permission to be different, back to the gifts of the Spirit.
Yeah.
A permission to be different and yet find common cause.
Yeah.
And that's really what we're here about today.
Yeah. With that, let's go to a break, and we'll be right back. Hey, and we are back with Faithfully Memphis. This is Emily Austin from the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and I'm here with the Reverend Tom Momberg and Courtney Staub, who is representing herself today, but also here to talk about Moms Demand Action and just being a good human being. So welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So during the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, just insider knowledge, all. Whenever we play music, we take a break, we take a drink, and we talk about what we're going to launch back in on. And I was asking Father Tom, will you read the quote that you reviewed in preparation for this show that was written by our fearless leader in her book, Bishop Phoebe Rofe? This is from her book, This Band of Sisterhood, right?
This Band of Sisterhood, yeah. Which means this band of women bishops of color.
Yeah.
That's sisterhood. Excuse me. So here's the quote from our bishop. The struggle right now, and the book is now maybe a year old.
It's about a year and a half old.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think the struggle is still right now.
Yeah.
The struggle right now is that in many cases, we are so polarized that we don't want to be in relationships with people who don't want us living.
Mm. Mm.
Now, as a straight white guy, I don't think there are too many people that I know of who don't want me living. I don't know what it's like to live on a daily basis with that kind of concern or fear or anxiety, whatever it calls up and emotionally. What I do know is that as a man and as a white man, that I do have times in which I'm not really sure what to do with how I feel, whether it's anger or sadness. And I'm grateful that I've had good teachers and therapists and others in my life and an amazing family that's helped me with those questions. But I think what I'm hearing kind of behind that statement is another quote that I have really held on to by one of my spiritual teachers over the years, Parker Palmer. Who is a Quaker, by the way, and he says that violence is what we do when we don't know what to do with our suffering.
Mm.
Mm. And if I am an angry, sad, feeling displaced person who is on the margins, I am certain if I were in that situation, I would not know what to do with my suffering. And I might just act out how I'm feeling. And I might then go after someone who I think should not be alive. So I think part of my work now as the person I am at this stage of my life is to try to learn more about what causes people to not want other people to be alive. Mm. What's that about?
Mm-hmm.
And how is that in me too?
That's something to chew on.
Yeah.
It is. And I think there's this weird, I've been talking to, I have this wonderful friend, African-American woman, and she's been very gracious to me about kind of helping me understand allyship, helping me understand mm-hmm. what it looks like to kind of piggyback on what Tom was saying. It's like, I'm a straight white woman. I mean, if you're not a straight white man, what's the next on the list of, you know, preferential straight white woman?
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, sometimes I just really don't like being white. And I said, because I feel like I'm a visible symbol of all these horrific things that are happening in the world to anyone who is not white. And she said, okay. She said, but then that's your call to figure out how you, okay, so you can't change the color of your skin, but you can certainly show, you can go out and show that you're gonna sit mm-hmm. in a different space.
I guess it was about a month ago, Shannon K. Evans, who's a writer in the Catholic tradition, was on the show, and we were talking about privilege, and one of the things that I have been carrying with me since that conversation that we spoke about was that when you don't have a lot to lose, which I'm in a position where I may feel like I have a lot to lose, but I really don't. I mean, when you're in that position, when you don't have a lot to lose, is when it's time to cut the cord and put yourself out there. Because, I mean, ideally, we will all, you know, put ourselves in our neighbor's shoes and advocate for them regardless. But it's especially, like, I don't have any other excuse. Kindness and standing up is the only option that makes any sense to bridge the divide between the have and the have not in the world, but especially in America, especially within our context here in Memphis, Tennessee. Mm. I can only morally give of myself. I mean, I can't speak to anybody else, but for me at least, that's my truth. That's what I feel like I've been called toward. And that's what I'm kind of hearing from both of y'all too, is that you can't not. You have to stand up and you have to put yourself in a position where you can build a more peaceful world and advocate for those who have been left behind.
And I think of it as a holy gesture. You know, you're demonstrating for others what's possible. So for someone else who's in a place of struggle on their journey, whatever that may be, who's scared about stepping up or stepping out, you're there and you can kind of offer your hand and say, we're going to have to get some more bravery than maybe you have right now, but
we're all gonna stumble.
Yeah.
We're all so imperfect.
Right. But
God did not.
No.
Anybody.
But I'll hold your hand and we'll figure this out together.
Yeah.
Because when we first started with moms, it was like, I felt full of, good.
It's like, they're good. Now I'm here.
Yeah.
So I'm like God's gift to the Episcopal Church. It's like, oh, guess what? And then you're like, oh, this is a bigger problem than I thought it was going to be.
Right. Yeah. This problem is not, the problem of gun violence is happening in all of our communities, but of course, mm-hmm. you know, it's affecting our, you know, friends of color a lot more than it's affecting mm-hmm. us.
And our LGBTQ siblings.
Right.
I mean...
So, yeah, but it's like, here I am, I'm going to come into this space, hopefully with humility, and say, mm-hmm. I'm here, I just want to help. I want this to be better for all of us. Yeah. So I'm going to just try to come into this space. And it's been, I've met some women, and I'm so thankful that they take me in and, you know, and show me love. It's really, that's the gift to me that yeah. they welcome me into this really difficult space where they have had a much more personal, heartbreaking experience with gun violence than I have. But it's like, it's not a contest. It's a, yeah. we all want this to be better. Let's all hold hands and make it better.
Right.
So.
Right.
I must say that I have never considered myself God's gift to Good. The Episcopal Church.
See, and that's why you're a better person than me, Tom.
But I am a man, and I know that men sometimes think they are God's gift to womanhood. So I won't go there either. But
you know, we're just laying it all out on the table today. It's fine.
Here's what I do want to say. I heard the phrase LGBTQ siblings a moment ago. So when I heard about an Episcopal church recently that had a bomb threat and a personal death threat to the pastor, because this pastor was pastor of so-called LGBTQ church, I lost it. And this is the intersection of gun violence and the hatred of LGBTQ mm-hmm. folks. Mm-hmm. And again, when it gets personal, it becomes different for us. And so I'm the oldest of five children. My wife and I both have children from previous marriages. I have a large extended family. So I can say without... worrying about whether I might be violating someone's confidentiality. I have family members who are in the LGBTQ community. I have family members who are not European American. And when that happened for me, when I became aware of those things, by marriage or however those new family members entered my life and my awareness, it changed.
Yeah.
It was personal. It was already personal because I have children in terms of gun violence and concerns and advocacy. But, you know, I think back to this thing about the Spirit being at work and coming afresh on Sunday on Pentecost, there is the question about how faith informs advocacy. That's part of what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But there's also a way in which advocacy informs faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the words that's used to describe the Spirit is the advocate. Mm-hmm. So when we don't think we have other advocates with flesh on, there might just be one who's always there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I need to remember that too. So the preacher's finished now.
That'll yeah. preach.
No, I
love
like it.
Same.
Preach a good word. Somebody told me this wonderful quote once about you can live your life as though everything is a miracle or though nothing is. And I don't know. It was.
I think I'm the first one.
I was like, I thought that's me. That's why. I mean, that's why I continue to go to church. That's why I continue to consider myself a person of faith, is to be with others and yeah. experience something and be mm. like, oh, this is a holy moment. This is a
yes.
divine moment.
Yeah. I want to find that source of that quote, because that resounds a lot with me.
Right. But I, it's, you know, where is God? Wherever you're looking.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we yeah. can sit, the three of us today, and have this conversation and talk about our personal experiences and talk about this, you know, the work that we're doing to try to be better human beings and be, you know, active people of faith. It's like, you know, is God with us? We think so. We hope so.
I think God is with us. Yeah. I think he can't not be with us.
Right.
So this has been a holy hour, I would say. I'm gonna stamp that imprimatur on it, that this has been an hour well spent.
So speaks the Pope.
Yes. Did you not know? I'm not only, yeah. Good Lord. What's giving y'all hope in this world that is just every day, it's all the time? What's giving you hope?
If I may. So it's the other advocates who give me hope when I don't feel as hopeful. And I want to say something specific about, so what's next? Because I think that's really the issue for many of us. Again, prayers and thoughts are important. But what's my next thing to do? What's the next thing for me to do? One of the next things for me to do is to be part of the Wear Orange weekend, which is coming up a week from this weekend, not Memorial Day weekend, but the first weekend in June. Wear Orange is something that started about 8 years ago, I think, when a young African-American girl in Chicago who had been who's a survivor of gun violence talked about how she knew that when people go into the woods to hunt, they wear orange to protect themselves and one another. And so Wear Orange has become an event once a year where people literally wear orange, and in honor of those who both have died from gun violence, but also those who survived. And I brought with me today this stole, which is what a pastor tends to wear. And this stole was made by a woman who is a nurse, Colleen Hintz, H-I-N-T-Z. Fruit of the Vine is her work, her ministry. And for those who can't see it right now, it is full of faces.
I'll put it in our Instagram stories. So definitely, if you're listening, look on our EDWTN Instagram, and you'll see.
And that weekend, I'll be wearing that on Sunday, the 4th of June. But on Saturday, the 3rd of June, there is a march that the LGBTQ community, their Pride March, will be having. But the moms folks will be in the march.
Absolutely.
Would you say more about that? Because you probably know more, Courtney.
I wish I could elaborate on it. I know moms will have a presence there. They'll have a booth. They will have participation in the march, actually, because I'm leading the Pride activities for my church. I have not been as involved with moms participation this year as I have in past years. But yes, please come. I could say so many wonderful things about Pride, but if you, Emily, you were asking kind of what's giving you hope. Going to Pride is really such a joyful, hopeful time when you see a place where, our LGBTQ brothers and sisters can be together, can celebrate themselves in the fullness of who they are.
Yes.
And those of us who want to support and love that community can come. And it's so welcoming. That word doesn't seem strong enough, but it's
holy.
Yes, and people are excited to see each other, and so it's really, I really encourage you, and it's super family friendly. Come on down, march, wear your rainbow.
Yes, y'all are the best. Thank you so much for joining me on Faithfully Memphis this morning. I y'all are my community, and I appreciate you both, Father Tom and Courtney Staub.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you, Emily, very much.
This has been Faithfully Memphis. We are a podcast from the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. You can listen to past episodes on our podcast, Faithfully Memphis. And if you want to go on to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review, it really helps us out, helps more people learn about our show.